This is Mae Brussel, the second half of World Watchers, in case you just turned on the radio in the middle of that first half and don't understand what this is. It's a one-hour analysis of particular events that are taking place in the news, and this is broadcast number 749, the second half of the program. I ended the other a minute ago describing a man named, or telling you about a man named Mark Yarry, Y-A-R-R-Y, who's lived in London 2 years. He went away when Mr. Dominelli was arrested. He was one of the fundraisers for this $100 million scam where the money left the country. He left for Europe after J. David's collapsed in 1984, early 84. He's 46 years old, and for the first time he'll discuss the inner workings and his role in the company and his relationship with J. David Dominelli, the La Jolla investment firm that attracted $200 million from 1,500 investors. There's quite a difference. One is 330 investors and 100 million, and this particular article says 200 million, which makes it even worse when he describes the 200 million. And they said they were promised 40% increase on their annual returns. And also, when the scandal broke, it involved a removal in San Diego to another person very close to Pete Wilson, the San Diego mayor, Roger Hedgecock, because in 1983 his campaign was secretly bankrolled by J. David. Now, when Pete Wilson of San Diego ran for office, he was married to a lady, and he separated from her and moved in with some investors whose names were never mentioned. And I did broadcast on Pete Wilson wanting to know who was funding the senator, because he's become so prominent in the company of William Rogers, Gerald Ford, Henry Kissinger, and those people that Dominelli and the big bucks that he was floating in when he ran for senator against Jerry Brown out here in California. And again, if you think these are California problems, we only have 100 senators, and one of them is yours, and it's Pete Wilson. Okay, Dominelli, getting back to the LA Times article, Dominelli admitted that he invested virtually none of the client's funds, that he lost $82 million in investor money. And Mr. Yarry, as I said, wants to come home and tell what happened. Now, in addition to possible security law violations, authorities are probing Yarry's secret Swiss bank account, in which he named Sebastian after his cat, which is very nice. And they give a figure purported in the Swiss accounts, but it isn't even worth repeating because I'm sure it must be 1,000 times larger or not definable considering how much money went away. But the account was under the name of his cat, and he owes back income taxes in the United States. Then it goes on, Mr. Yarry's checkered past includes selling inexpensive diamonds, and this gets back to the gemstone scam that Bruce Roberts told me about, and I won't digress to that, at the time of the Watergate scandals. He practiced medicine without a license, and he posed as a mafiosa to break a British counterfeit ring in Scotland Yard. He authored a book on commodities trading, and he claims to have crossed the Swiss and Italian Alps. The reason practicing medicine without a license is so important is that because at the time of the Watergate entries, the GOP was campaigning in Beverly Hills, California that night of the entry into the Democratic headquarters, and they were at the Beverly Hills Hotel, and they quickly packed everybody up and moved down to La Costa in California, at which time Martha Mitchell picked up the phone and called Helen Thomas in Washington, and because she knew the Watergate people that were arrested, and talked about the mafia connections to the White House. She was taken by Herbert Kalmbach under an alias, disguised as his wife, to a hospital. They were down in San Diego, and got an injection in her butt, and 3 years later died of this terrible cancer where her bones disintegrated, a disease similar to AIDS. Now, while all this scandal is going on, this past week, March 28th, 1986, there's a story in the L.A. Herald on the AP wire service, tax swindler Dominelli suffers a stroke in prison. That's just days after the Rogers, the Wells, Casey outfit is mentioned as settling a $40 million scandal February 22nd. So March 28th, just 26 days later, Dominelli has one of those famous strokes similar to the kind of sickness that Michele Sindona had, but he also had a little stroke later. He got a serious stroke a month later, and the wire service and L.A. Herald said convicted swindler J. David Dominelli, he was conscious, recovering from a mild stroke in prison. He's serving a 20-year sentence for fraud and so forth. He pleaded guilty in 1985, in March 85. Mr. Hardy, who was handling the case of the federal government, concerned about him, said he was not aware that Dominelli was ailing until he was informed of the stroke. He didn't know that this particular person was sick until he was informed of the stroke Wednesday afternoon, and he was rushed to Valley Memorial Hospital in Livermore, California, near San Francisco. Earlier this week, attorneys representing investors who have sued Dominelli met with him at the Federal Correctional Center in Pleasant, California, and they wanted to get a videotape deposition, but he refused. He also had suffered a stroke in San Diego in 1984, and as a result of that stroke, he lost most of his ability to speak for several months. The therapist had worked with him, and now he's had another stroke, and it goes on to say that he illegally financed the mayoral campaign of Roger Hedgecock in San Diego. So I think, again, to cite the power that came in to run the mayoral campaign of Little Carmel, California, with 30 countries representative here, considering the milieu and the oil people that ran that, just keep your eyes open. As California goes, so goes the nation. Now, the man who's in the news, and I do want to do one or two or three hours on him, is Lyndon LaRouche, and he's very controversial. I have several people that bust a gut. If I mention his name, I'm going to cite part of an article of his from Executive Intelligence Review that involves San Diego because of the milieu in San Diego around the politics taking place in the past 40 years and the kinds of people we're talking about that have law offices in New York but that work in San Diego. And there are a lot of people that think that even if his material is right, you shouldn't cite him because he's a fascist. I think Ronald Reagan is a fascist and Edwin Meese is a fascist. And I think Dan Rather and Cronkite and all of them, the man most trusted in America, Mr. Cronkite, I wouldn't trust him at all. They lied about the coup in this country. They lied about the murder of Kennedy. And they offer no information such as Lyndon LaRouche's magazines do. And I'm very grateful for the subscription I have to it. Now, I'm going to cite just a page from a current thing he has to show you the milieu in San Diego. In San Diego is the basis of C. Arnold Smith, another crook who was indicted, who took away millions and millions of dollars, who was behind the career of Richard Nixon from the days of Navy intelligence and ran him in 1946 and became a House of Representatives, a senator, a vice president. After the two Kennedys were murdered, he was back as president, where he wanted to be. The Lincoln Club, the Lockheed Corporations in California, and the San Diego nest of C. Arnold Smith was behind the Nixon. John DeLorean had a home in San Diego for a good reason, and he worked closely with William Hetrick, who flew down to South America. And I still want to know more about that cocaine that was in the hotel that Hetrick had, and the relationship to John DeLorean, and if that, in fact, was the money from the cocaine that Barbie sent to the Joseph Mengele account because of the San Diego connections of DeLorean and Hetrick, and I'll continue to tie those again more in a few moments. Now, Mr. J. Dominelli worked in San Diego and funded the political career of these people down there, including a mayor who had to leave office, and worked closely with William Rogers of New York City and William Casey's law office, and this was the San Diego branch. And why would they siphon if it's 1,500 people and 200 million? Where did it go, and does the CIA take a little bit from everybody, declare bankruptcy, and put it in the pocket of covert operations or private oil deals? Now, down in that area, as I say, is La Costa, where Martha Mitchell was when she was taken to a hospital injected. Was this particular guy from J. David Dominelli, was he the one who, as a disguise, gave her the shot in the behind? We don't know, but it's certainly interesting to ask what Mr. Mark Yeary was doing disguised as a doctor and what he did or practiced in San Diego as an investor crook, holding needles or injecting as a doctor, because out of La Costa comes that modalities relationship. It was set up by the Teamsters from Las Vegas money. The Teamsters were the only union that supported Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. And the head of the House Select Committee on Assassinations, G. Robert Blakey, is the lawyer and close friend and the personal friend of Mo Dallas, as is Paul Exalt, being pushed as the next president. And down at Del Mar, California, comes J. Edgar Hoover, close ties every year with Clint Murchison, who set up the assassination death squads in the United States, and Hoover of Division 5 of the FBI, part of the Permandex hit team, along with Murchison and political assassinations that met down in Del Mar. La Costa, Mo Dallas from Vegas and Del Mar, J. Edgar Hoover and Murchison and DeLorean's nest down there with South American and international and Vatican connections, see Arnold Smith with Nixon. And out of that team comes Pete Wilson, the senator who Kissinger Ford campaigned for, close to the Rogers law offices that represented Dominelli and Jay Dominelli's work with the multi-million-dollar scandal, the $200 million. Let's go for the top figure. It's probably more than that. And the very law office has been named William Rogers himself. And so that there's a nest of people that goes up and down this coast and then, of course, east to affect and around the world to affect the whole world. Now, Lyndon LaRouche has an article titled Who's Who in the Pollard Case. It's from Executive Intelligence Review, and it has to do with the arrest of Jonathan J. Pollard, who went to Stanford University. He was a roommate of Jonathan Marshall of Libertarian Party, and I want to do more on that one of these days. And he was a spy even at Stanford University. And this article is about the Pollard case because the head of the Mossad, the former head of the Mossad in Israel, Rafi Eitan, E-Y-T-A-N, was the agent in charge of information that Pollard was supposed to be taking from Navy intelligence in the United States. Now, Eitan's name has been mentioned on other broadcasts I've done because he met in February of 1985 in Bonn, Germany, with Robert Ernest Kaiser. Kaiser, close to, he worked with the Wehrmacht, Hitler's army in the war, close to the CIA, the Defense Department, part of the assassination teams and death squads. And those two men were in Bonn, Germany, saying that Kaiser was offering to bring in Joseph Mengele alive in 1985. And Eitan, Dirty Rafi, has been saying continuously that Mengele is not dead. So we're talking about the state of mind of these people and who they work with. But Eitan also, besides working with Robert Kaiser in Bonn, Germany, and part of the Mossad intelligence, is linked to as the cutoff man with Jonathan J. Pollard. And in the course of describing Eitan, the Executive Intelligence Review said that Eitan is a lifelong Mossad operative with a specialty in assassinations. He's a cousin of the former Mossad spy master. He was recruited into the Mossad in 1950 into the Israeli intelligence. He was part of their internal intelligence. He rose rapidly in the Mossad. He was appointed the head of the clandestine operations, which was the assassination operations in Western Europe. And also it was Robert Ernest Kaiser, his co-partner that he was meeting with in Germany, who was hired to kill William Taub at the time of the Watergate scandals involving Nixon and Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters, and making Fitzsimmons and the other team, they became a political ball, and the agreement was to wipe out Hoffa and let the next group take over, and he was supposed to kill Taub, who was close to Hoffa. The article goes on, following his work with the Mossad in Israel, in 1972, he moved to San Diego, California, for a man named Amon Barnes, A-M-M-O-N-B-A-R-N-E-S-S, who ran the Dalen Drug Company, a San Diego-based intelligence front. It's now in Panama, and I will continue maybe next week or the week after under the new Nazi regime coming into Panama that was part of the Adolf Hitler regime that LaRouche has been exposing. The gentleman is in Panama now, but Dalen Drugs was the cover for Rafi Eitan, Dirty Rafi, in San Diego, the milieu when just at the time of the Watergate arrest in 1972. Now, it was in San Diego in 1972 that Squad 19 was going to plan to kill Richard Nixon. The Los Angeles Police Department, Squad 19, was to kill Nixon at the time of the nomination and declare martial law in the United States and have Spiro Agnew linked to the Greek Nazis put in by OMB and the Defense Department with William Rogers as their attorney and make Spiro Agnew president of the United States. That was to take place in the summer of 1972 in San Diego. And Mr. Rafi Eitan from the Mossad was down there in San Diego in 1972 working for Dalen Drug Company, which was an intelligent front, and Mr. Amon Barnes now lives in Panama. And this goes on to say Barnes has been detailed to the United States. He was here in 1947 as an officer of the Haganah, the Israeli organization. In 1957, Barnes became a chief financial officer of the newly formed Permandex Corporation, which has been identified with joint assassination bureaus that directed the murder of John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy, they said, among other strategic assassinations. The man that brought Rafi Atan to San Diego in 1972, when Nixon was going to be murdered to make ready for Agnew, was the member of the Permandex operation that had done away with the two Kennedys and Martin Luther King, 1963 and two of them in 1968, one at the Ambassador Hotel, Robert Kennedy, owned by David Shine, co-partner of Roy Cohn of Permandex. Roy Cohn is part of Permandex and the assassination team. And then in the 1970s, under the Dahlin Company, Eitan was working in the United States, building up his network of organized crime and working in the Defense Department and with Navy intelligence and Israeli intelligence, and was working with Jonathan J. Pollard. So that is part of the San Diego team at the time that the Permandex operators were planning one more operation to make Agnew in. The trick of history was that the Scotch tape at the Watergate Hotel broke open the whole story, and the investors into that coup or into the GOP had only until April for secrecy to invest in the elections, and after that the fundings were public. So the money for the coup was blown because the money went to Marriott hotels. If you don't remember, they were paying off the GOP, and the elections were to be decided by the nomination in the hotel in San Diego. And when Jack Anderson broke the story of Dita Beard and the funding operations, the nominations were moved to Miami, and they didn't have time between the spring and the summer of 72 to raise the kind of money to get a military coup d'etat like they had in Dallas, and it fell through. And as soon as Nixon was caught with the Watergate thing, he removed Spiro Agnew so that that line of succession didn't flow. And then he put Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission as his vice president. And then when he was out, a member of the Warren Commission became president and put Nelson Rockefeller as vice president. So that is the milieu of San Diego. Now, another story involving New York City and William Rogers and the Casey offices is even more scandalous, considering that Casey has gotten away with so much with his mafia investment overseas, Robert Vesco, Security Exchange, John Mitchell. He was OSS, CIA, a Knight of Malta. You can't touch William Casey. And now he's escalating his power in Afghanistan, Angola, in Central America. He's a disease that should be removed surgically or some way. But his offices continue to be exposed, and the President of the United States appoints William Rogers of that outfit to head the shuttle investigation, which involves Nazis. And again, the President has put in William Rogers, who is covering up the Nazis from Huntsville, Alabama, that are going to get their new space shuttle, that are going into the Star Wars. They're going to put their colonies on the moon. They're going to have their $800 billion for Mars. All of the things they wanted followed after the Challenger was blown up. Instead of changing office, the people from Huntsville, NASA, the old Von Braun team, the Walter Dornberger crew that are there today, that inherited the mantle, they were named in the Torba document along with Roy Cohn and these same Permandex operators as one-fifth of a branch of Permandex, along with that other part of J. Edgar Hoover and Division 5 and Clint Murchison and the meeting places in Del Mar, California. So this law office now comes in another scandal while he hands over, as I say, the Star Wars, the moon colonies, the Mars operations to the people in Huntsville and to Rockwell International. Also, remember now that Mr. Deaver, Michael Deaver, and there's so many scandals around him, is the public relations man for Rockwell International at a time where they'll get more billions to make more shuttles and more Star Wars. And Deaver was the man who bowed out of White House service by presenting the president to the cemetery of the Waffen-SS at Bitburg, his last grand act for himself and Nancy Reagan before he went to be an agent for the South Korean government, for Saudi Arabia and for Rockwell International, among other things. Now, the article that is so interesting I'm going to cite now, it comes from the San Francisco Chronicle and the New York, Chicago Tribune, not the New York Times. But it may have been reprinted in your other papers. I don't know if it was or not. New York frontmen detail secret Marcos deals. And many of you read about the Bernstein family and the deals of investing their money in New York City. And this article may be a little different than what you've seen. It may repeat some, and most of it, I hope, is new. It says former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos and his wife own four commercial buildings in New York City, and we are familiar with those. The Crown Building on Fifth Avenue, the Herald Center, the shopping complex on Madison Avenue, and a building at 40 Wall Street. She looked at that building, thought it was nice, gave the investors $120 million to buy a restaurant, and went around town buying up things for New York City. And the people testifying about this are Joseph and Ralph Bernstein, who acted as the trustee for Mr. and Mrs. Marcos in buying this, and they used Swiss bank accounts. And the article goes on, the Bernsteins grew up in the Philippines and live in New York. They said their dealings began in the fall of 1981. Of course, as soon as Ronald Reagan, a close friend of the Marcos, was president, he was inaugurated in January of 81. The big splash could get going, and here comes Mr. Casey, the CIA director, a good pal, all the way back to all these people. And Casey's name has been thrown around on documents involving that false energy, Saudi Arabia energy money that the Marcos scammed out, that they were supposed to be building, and William Casey worked for the Security Exchange Commission. So he's linked to the Marcos money scam in the Philippines, and still, if President Reagan is the Teflon, Casey is the Teflon also because of his investments in involvement in the Philippines. And you read it once, hear it once on TV, and you think it'll splash like Watergate, and then it goes away. This article goes on, Joseph Bernstein, an attorney, said his New York law office established a corporation in the Netherlands Antilles. Of course, that's a big place for Mark Rich, the partner of Henry Kissinger, and Marvin Davis. The Netherlands Antilles is not so big, but it carries a lot of weight for investments. And they use this haven for an offshore company at the request of TANCO. They call it T-A-N-T-C-O. The company was used in the purchase of the Crown Building on Fifth Avenue, the skyscraper, for around $51 million. The building is now appraised at $101 million. It's doubled in these 5 years. The transaction was further concealed in three separate holding companies in Panama. And this is like the Vatican losing $1.2 billion around Panama on these companies. It said each one held one-third interest in the building through anonymous bearer shares. The Panamanian companies enabled the owners to avoid paying New York state property taxes. So the Bernsteins, who grew up in the Philippines, don't want Mr. and Mrs. Marcos to pay New York City. You could clean up a little bit of the subway. You could clean the streets, you know, get rid of the garbage and get some clean air. But those taxes are avoided by setting up three Panama companies. And they said a similar arrangement was made when they bought the three other buildings. Goodness knows that Marcos would pay taxes in New York City, so they put it under a Panamanian name. Most of the financing was provided by a Swiss bank represented by Rogers and Wells of the New York law firm, which former Secretary of State William Rogers is a partner, and William Casey, director of the Central Intelligence Agency. They describe him as a former partner because he has a job in the federal government as director of the intelligence agency. But he goes back. He has the same clients. In 1981, when the president was inaugurated, just when Casey was being considered as director of the CIA, they are setting up money that goes to Switzerland and down to Panama in three offices with anonymous names to buy up places in New York City that have doubled in value. If they put in $316 million in just those four buildings, then they have $636 million value right now with no taxes, arranged by a member of the cabinet of the President of the United States. Now, we have heard on the air Lyndon LaRouche was put down by the mass media, and Ronald Reagan said it was absolutely ridiculous that a member of his cabinet, the chief of staff, Donald Reagan, who was Secretary of the Treasury, was involved in mob money. The court records show it. As of 1982, the Merrill Lynch connections to the spaghetti, not the spaghetti, the mozzarella pizza money to Tommaso Busetti, to the heroin traffic. The records show E.F. Hutton funneled this money, and the president of E.F. Hutton is the brother-in-law of George Bush, Barbara Bush's brother. These denials that this takes place, this is the most corrupt cabinet. The Donovan case is going up soon. Raymond Donovan, Secretary of Labor. The entire cabinet, Paul Axalt, the chief fundraiser from the Senate, from the territory of the Nevada, all mafia, all scandalous in the operations that have taken place in the years. And then that team, a hunk of it, moves down to San Diego and becomes very influential there. This article from the Chicago Tribune said Peter Williams, a partner in the firm, said that an affidavit released to the subcommittee said that they met with Marcos October of 81 with Imelda Marcos 2 weeks after to discuss the renovation of the Crown Building and so forth. Now, that is really scandalous that the law offices of Rogers and Wells and Casey arrange these Swiss Panamanian scams so that those poor people in New York City don't have the money to improve the city. The taxes don't go to New York State or city or federal. I imagine they arrange tax scams for Fernando Marcos, and this is a man on the cabinet of the President of the United States. There are times when you think that I would stop being shocked, but I still am shocked at all of this. Now, you might have read a small article, an obituary. I didn't see it in the major papers, but maybe they came late, and I'll see them now. James Crosby died this past week, April the 11th. James Crosby. The Monterey Herald had a short story. New Jersey casino official, Atlantic City, James Crosby, who transferred a paint company, that's the Mary Carter Paint Company, into the Giant Resorts International, died Thursday at New York University Hospital following respiratory surgery. He was 58 years old. He was chairman of Resorts International, and he came to Atlantic City in the spring of 76, and it goes on. He bought the Chalfont Haddon Hall, one of the old hotels. Now, today, the Wall Street Journal, April 14th, has a long story. Death of Resorts International's Crosby leaves control of the casino firm uncertain. And I must go on to say, because I won't have time to finish this evening, that I'll get back to, and I've been promising to repeat, the sections of Jeff Gerst's article in Sundance that came out December of 72 after Watergate of the links of Mr. Crosby, of Mary Carter Paint Company, and Richard Nixon, and William Rogers, and Will Wilson of Texas, and John Connolly on the board of Permandex, and Bebe Rebozo, and their links to the Caribbean, to organized crime, to Nixon and Rogers' career when he was Deputy Attorney General in December 53, they're purchasing money and property down in the Bahamas, and their work with Senator Joe McCarthy and the beginning of the whole Cold War, their links to G. Meyer Shine and David Shine, as I say, the one who owns the Ambassador Hotel where Robert Kennedy was to be murdered in 1968 by Permandex. And I'll share with you, some of you have the Sundance article, some of you don't, the role of William Rogers, our current investigator of the shuttle program with Richard Nixon, part of the Permandex operation that murdered John Kennedy, the career of Rogers and Casey and the Security Exchange Commission, dirty dealing, this was all out in 1972, earlier and long after, the swindling and the dealing, and this article goes into Jimmy Hoffa's desires, and then, of course, Ernest Kaiser was used to try to kill William Taub and his because of his relationship and close relationship to Jimmy Hoffa. Getting back to the Wall Street Journal article briefly, it says how James Crosby died. They don't know about his will. He was the head of Resorts International, and now the Wall Street analysts are saying the stock will increase because he held back on it. And maybe I'll detail this for you next week. But the interesting thing is that Mr. Crosby's sister, Suzanne Murphy, is the wife of Thomas S. Murphy, chairman of Capital Cities ABC. Capital Cities was founded by OSS, CIA, Knights of Malta, William Casey, who worked closely with Robert Vesco and that whole gang, and the chairman of Capital Cities ABC, Thomas Murphy, is married to the sister of James Crosby of Mary Carter Paint Company, the Resorts International, and they made millions of dollars, of course, from investment overseas. And that web is so tangled, I can't do that and finish up in 1 minute. I'll get back to it next week. But here we have Casey, law office with William Rogers, and of course, close to not only the news media now with a hunk owning ABC, but close to Resorts International and the crowd that go way back to the career of William Rogers and Richard Nixon. I'll continue with some of this next week. In the meantime, again, thanks for the many articles, many books, and things you're sending me. I really appreciate it, and this is Mae Brussel, and I'll be back with you in 1 more week to continue along with some of this.